Welcome to the Financial Management Magazine podcast series, a service of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. This series features discussions with chartered global management accountants and other experts about the topics, trends and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
We understand the importance of intelligence in doing our jobs, but what about the value of something more intangible, this concept called emotional intelligence? This is Neil Amato, a senior editor with FM Magazine. In this podcast, Claire Haynes touches on that and other leadership qualities. Claire Haynes is a speaker and coach, and she is the founder of the firm Wildfire. She is interviewed by Samantha White, a writer and editor based in the UK.
Today, I'm joined by Claire Haynes, speaker, facilitator, founder of and coach at Wildfire. Claire specializes in helping people develop their leadership skills, emotional intelligence, and build their ability to influence. Hi, Claire. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi there.
To begin with, could you tell us a bit about your professional background, your qualifications and experience?
Academically, I studied psychology, and that's where my passion lies. And then I entered a professional career of in sales, advertising, television, charity sector, housing and sport, quite a variety. And within that, I had a real passion for example, when I had management training to train my team. And from that, then I noticed a lot of things that people didn't necessarily get value from the workplace in terms of developing their talent. So I trained in coaching, neurolinguistic programming, performance management, and it went from there.
Excellent. And so one of the areas that you train people on is leadership. How do you define leadership?
That's such an interesting question. There's probably a million answers. For me, leadership is about simply getting people to want to follow you. So acting as a leader, and obviously we have in the world lots of different examples of leaders, whether it's political leaders or cause leaders or industry leaders, business leaders. Essentially, for me, it's about a personality and someone with conviction that people want to follow to motivate them to take action to do something positive.
Are there any other hallmarks of a good leader?
Someone that's an excellent communicator. So people that tend to have great technical skills, but balanced with the ability to communicate and get a message across in a way that gives people momentum and the motivation, and it in a way that they can translate it to individually apply to themselves.
Excellent. And so for someone who's not yet in a management role, but they're looking to build or demonstrate that capacity so that they're ready for when an opportunity comes up, what sort of things could they be working on?
In terms of leadership, we have so many more flat structures now in terms of hierarchy that I don't think it's a matter of waiting at all. There are so many people, for example, you can have people that are professional project managers across any field, whether it's finance and accounting or whether it's construction, it could be anything. And they need the same leadership capacity, the leadership qualities to engage people to do things because, frankly, they may not want to do them. And that's simply the role of the leader. So it's looking for any opportunity as early as you can. People that have been to university or been at college and they've known student leaders, they've known people that have led community groups, you can have youth leaders in all kinds of fields. Anywhere in your life, if you can inspire people and get someone to take action and to help them develop a plan and come on board, then you are demonstrating leadership qualities.
So there's no excuse for someone, oh, I couldn't possibly take that role because I have no leadership experience. There's no
Absolutely.
Excuse for that.
Yeah, it's about the problem we have actually is more about the fact that we are remarkably humble. So sometimes it's better when we're pushed into it because we don't realise. And sometimes it takes someone to say you are a real leader at that moment for someone to even realise. So it's really taking any opportunity you can to stick your neck out, maybe have a bit of courage, maybe fight a fear. Just do something you perhaps didn't think that you could. And perhaps along your way, you'll be finding that you're helping someone else that didn't think they could too.
Excellent.
And so we hear about a lot about authenticity in leadership at the moment. How can leaders balance professionalism with authenticity?
Authenticity is a great word, isn't it? Authenticity has become one of the most overused words in business language, I think, because people are bored of hearing it. So in a way, it's been dumbed down, if you like, or made a bit kind of grey. So the background to authenticity, or the reason people have that conversation, is it's about being your true self. So people basically, because we know that people can spot a fraud. We know people get a sense of someone being an imposter. So I guess it's your definition of what's professionalism. Everyone has a different definition of professionalism. For some, professionalism, particularly in more old-fashioned traditional professional sectors, can be seen or experienced as starchy, as a bit uptight, as in unemotional, inexpressive, purely technical, whereas authenticity is much more about who you're being to other people. Are you being yourself? Are you consistent? Are you allowing other people to be consistent? So I would argue that if you're being the right person at the right time with respect to yourself and respect to other people, essentially you could argue being an assertive person and allowing other people to be who they should be within your professional remit and exerting appropriate high quality technical skills at the same time, then you're combining authenticity and professionalism probably to the best of your ability.
Excellent. And moving on to emotional intelligence, that can sound like something that you would have naturally or not. How can one develop or work on their emotional intelligence?
Okay, so everybody can work on their emotional intelligence, and you can find lots of information online about developing emotional intelligence, and there are some great just Google free emotional intelligence tests, and from there you can evaluate your own from the starting point. But it does sound a bit like you're supposed to have had, you know, you already have an emotional intelligence level. Some people are naturally more emotionally intelligent. I know an 8-year-old who happens to have amazing emotional intelligence, and you watch in absolute awe thinking, wow, how do you know that at 8 when most of us don't know that at 45? But that's quite unusual. It's a combination of nature and nurture, but anybody can learn most things. And so it does help if you can find out where you are, find out from other people what impression do you give to them. And emotional intelligence is about your awareness of others and how you influence that and how you use that, and your awareness of yourself and how you combine the two. So it's about how you interact with other people, how much attention you give to other people, and how much accountability you take and responsibility for the impact of your own actions. So obviously within that, there's a lot of things that go on in your having a day-to-day conversation or just your day-to-day business life, for example, where you're so busy working on the task and the task in hand and you're focused that you don't have time to look in the mirror, film yourself, get feedback the whole time. That would sound quite self-involved, wouldn't it? So it's a matter of getting feedback wherever you can, learning whatever you can, making time to learn soft skills. So a mixture from assertiveness, listening. If you can listen to people, you are halfway there. And by listening to people, certainly in the Western world, that does not mean finishing their sentences. What we normally do in the way that we listen, a lot of us, is with that we just wait to get our airtime, if you like. And it's genuinely getting away from our own agenda, listening to other people, trying to understand what they want, and rather than fitting what they're saying into what we want to say, it's vice versa. And from that, already anyone can demonstrate better, higher quality emotional intelligence.
Excellent. I was at a workshop a few weeks ago where one of the exercises was to partner up and just listen to somebody talk for 3 minutes and not interrupt and not want to get your point in. And all the only objective you had was to listen to them and hear what they were saying, and then you had to relay it back. And it was really interesting to see how that reflex to just jump in and be like, oh, but what about this? Or I totally agree, or whatever. So I think listening, so it sounds really simple, but it really is something that a lot of us do need to work on.
Absolutely. And within teams, you can do really fun in team meetings or any kind of team opportunity. You can do some amazing, just like you said, that's a real typical listening exercise. And it's great fun. It normally ends up with a lot of giggles and laughter, but there's people realising, but it's great self-awareness.
Excellent. Is there an example you can give us of a time when a leader has demonstrated their emotional intelligence? Or alternatively, how a leader who demonstrates emotional intelligence makes us feel?
That's a good one. So a leader with high emotional intelligence will make someone feel valuable and will make someone feel as important as the next person. And they will get people to feel, if not special, certainly part of the team. And the difference between someone that's emotionally intelligent and not emotionally intelligent would be a leader that seems to be all about them, and you have absolutely zero faith that they would have your back and that they don't care about you at all. That it's just to make them look good. Whereas in fact, if it's reversed, and someone is being emotionally intelligent around you as a follower, then you automatically probably want to do the stuff that inadvertently will make them look good. And that's what emotionally intelligent leaders know. They know that they're steering the ship by bringing the whole ship on board. And we tend to love emotionally intelligent leaders. We don't necessarily know why. One example earlier in my career was, there was an IT guy. He was the head of IT in the organisation I worked for, and he had lunchtime info sessions, if you like. So something would be being updated, and he wanted to urge us to adopt a system. And most people were fairly resistant to new systems. But he would, everyone turned up in a conference room filling it. There was, you couldn't barely stand in there because he was so entertaining. And he so made it seem non-techy, non-nerdy, for want of a better word. He made it accessible for everybody. And he made everyone feel that they were part of the crew in order to make this thing work. Otherwise, what was the point of the investment? And that it was for all of us. And everyone left that room filing out, chuckling and laughing with other colleagues that they didn't necessarily normally get the opportunity across five floors in a very large building to talk to. And he was the epitome of someone leading people to adopt a change with very little persuasion or manipulation.
If you're working with a team and you want to get people on board with a change project, that kind of thing, what are some of the ways that you can build your influence with a particular group?
The most efficient way, I find, of getting people on board for anything, and this can be at the beginning of a workshop, at the beginning of a team meeting, in a change program, is work out what their whinges are. And you give people this opportunity because the amygdala, which is the emotional part of our brain, is designed for our survival. It makes us really efficient at thinking in the negative. So when people moan about the weather, particularly in Britain in the morning, it's actually to do with our survival. It's that we're looking out for things that are a danger to us or unpleasant to us or uncomfortable to us. Now, whilst we're not cavemen anymore, that is how our brain was designed for survival. So asking people the thing that matters most to them at that point that does not work for them is going to mean that they then feel heard. We think that when we ask for feedback, if we can't solve the problem, then people are going to feel that, well, that was a waste of time. Why did I bother telling you anyway? But actually, that's not the case. We don't necessarily expect someone to fix stuff for us. We just want to be heard. We want to feel that our opinion counts, that someone's there to listen. Sometimes just offloading does it. And once people have offloaded, then you can say, right, well, these are the bits that we can fix. These are the bits that we can't. We'd like to keep you in consultation. We'd like to keep your views matter. We can't. Really emphasize to people, we can't do it without you. Because if you tell people where we're going to run roughshod over you anyway, then naturally, if anything, you're more likely to get saboteurs or people that take the system or whatever it is hostage in a way and slow it down and make the whole atmosphere toxic. Whereas if you have to work with what you've got, and there are some normal, real good eggs, some really fantastic gems in there, and out of most change projects, you can identify future leaders. They're almost like the fantastic bonus that comes out of a change project. But you have to get them to be a significant part of the thing. And also what routinely fails in change programs is that the consultation period at the beginning, and you don't have to call it a consultation period, but the point at which you ask the people who are using it already or doing the work already, saying, you know, what's it like on the coalface? What matters? What doesn't? What do you get slammed in the neck for? What upsets you? What do you stress on? You know, what wakes you up at night about this? What would you love someone to change if they could wave a magic wand? You will get the majority of your answers with regards to change, providing you treat people with the respect that they really deserve. And they, in turn, will then probably come along on board with you.
Fantastic. Okay. You mentioned feedback there. A lot of line managers struggle to give good, useful, actionable, for want of a better word, feedback. What advice would you give line managers who struggle with letting their reports know how they're getting on?
You're absolutely right. 65% of people want more feedback. It's one of the most underutilised things that we have access to as managers. So it's about being specific. The problem we have is people, particularly in the UK, people are British politeness, if you like. People are scared of not being liked, but unfortunately, if you're going to be a manager, you're going to have to get used to that. It's not about building friends. It's not making friends or being popular. It's about making a team work and being productive. And in a way, leading them and commanding respect. So people want to know feedback. There's also a wider issue here, is that the curriculum has changed over recent years to the point where education is much more assessment driven now. So younger generations are having much more frequent assessment as they grow up. They are getting feedback the whole time. It's about giving people specifics, and it's, if you search anything for feedback, it will always be mentioned that it needs to be timely. There's no point telling someone 2 weeks later you behaved really appallingly in that meeting. Needless to say, that would be a really vague statement anyway. It'd be, well, what exactly did they do? So people need to know exactly what they've done or what they should be doing, exactly what's expected of them in the future, what time frame it needs to be done in, and exactly what happened. Ideally, it should always be backed up by a conversation. People just need to know when they're doing well and when they're not doing so well. And if that's balanced, then you can really unlock some great talent in your team.
What are some of the steps that companies can take to better identify and utilise workers' real talents?
What companies can do is, well, it's often seen as something more complicated than perhaps it is. It's about genuinely taking an interest and finding out what people like to do and what they don't like to do, and give them a lot of variety and give them the confidence to try new things. Hopefully, just like you might remember a really great teacher, at some point in our lives, we all have a really great boss or someone that had really fantastic influence on us, probably because they coached us somehow. They got us to see something or do something that we didn't necessarily believe we had access to or were capable of. There's a guy that I knew when I was in my 20s called Dave, who wasn't my manager. He kind of filled a gap. And that happened for me. And he would be the most fantastic example. He got me to do something that I didn't think I could do in terms of problem solving. And there are so many areas that people feel passionate about, they get excited about, and things that they don't get excited about. So in one way, it doesn't matter if they're ranting or they're raving about it. If you can untap a passion in someone so that they want to do something, and if you can allow them to have access, whether it's through buddying or mentoring or task forces or project teams, getting people to take on new things. One way some companies have done this in the past there are some good examples from all around the world. People have 3 days. So they literally give their staff a 3 day, whether it's monthly or whether it's every once a year, where they literally can choose one innovation project. They invent an innovation project, and on company time and with a budget or not, they go and develop an improvement that will benefit that organisation. And it doesn't have to do, doesn't have to be to do with their technical ability, their normal technical skill. It's about unlocking the potential that people have and allowing them to bring it to you. Because otherwise, people just sit in the pigeonhole that you've put them in, which is a massive waste of talent. We work cross-functionally now. So business partnering, that's a phrase that talks about being cross-functional. It's about working across the organisation and allowing people to contribute to the best of their ability. It means that we can't tar everyone with the same brush anymore. We have to allow people to be individual. And as a result of that, businesses get some really fantastic new fresh bonuses without having a massive R&D budget, perhaps.
By allowing people to unleash that up till now untapped creativity and those talents that they hadn't been recognised.
Absolutely. Yep.
Excellent. One of the areas that you help people out with is overcoming organisational roadblocks. If someone comes to you for coaching about a problem that appears to them too complex, too unwieldy for them to handle, how do you help them break it down and make it more manageable so that they can begin to tackle it?
Often normally throwing it back at them is a really short answer. So when people have an issue, a typical, a normal coaching style, you just get them to literally blurt it out and just get people to have almost verbal diarrhea and tell you exactly what the problem is. Because half the problem is that we keep it in our heads and we're emotionally attached to it and it goes a bit like spaghetti in our heads and we get all confused by it and we can't see the wood for the trees. So it's much easier if in blurting it out, you kind of make sense of it. In order to actually describe something to someone, you have to make some logic of it in order to be able to communicate it through language. So already you're unpicking it, but we know that there is much more power in your brain and with your emotional motivation if you make something happen rather than being told to do it in a way that someone else would do it. So rather than me saying, this is how I would deal with it, if anything, if people are really stuck, asking people, well, if there was someone else that you were helping, how would you tell them to do it? Or getting people to work in a team. It's ultimately, again, it's in some ways, it is about going negative again. It's getting people to just blurt it all out. And they say, okay, so are there any angles that you can see it differently? What if we theme this? What if we put it into different projects? What if we break it up into different sections? What if we broke this up according to every different department in the organisation? What if we divided this up according to every different sector in our supply chain, for example? It's about breaking it down so people can see it simply. There's something called the five whys, which is part of Kaizen and Lean thinking, where you ask why five times in a problem solving. And we are in such a rush to solve a problem that we might ask two whys. We don't keep asking why, because ultimately, if you keep asking what the problem is, you'll get to the source of it, and you will spend a lot less effort finding the specific thing that's going to solve that specific part or that specific problem. What we do is we're impatient and we rush. And a lot of Asian countries are not as impatient as we are, and there are a lot of good things that we could borrow from them. But it's allowing people time to think. We get an influx of emails, we go to lots of meetings, people don't feel that they have time to think, let alone speak what they think, because everyone's competing all the time for a short space of time. So it's giving people space and time, and people are brilliant. The people in your organisation can be brilliant. Sometimes you find people make consultancy outsourcing decisions, or people might talk to someone like me, assuming I can go and solve the problem or help them solve the problem in the organisation, where a simple conversation internally sometimes would far better kickstart the answer to the problem.
There's a lot of practical insights that we can take away and hopefully use in our own organisations there. How should we identify the areas that we want to work on, perhaps?
I think there are different ways that you can come at personal development, or personal and professional development. So on one hand, you have your professional body and following some of the themes and the threads that they're putting forward, which are normally contemporary threads, and they're answering what have already been identified as current business needs or trends. So they are probably going to stand out quite well on your CV. That'd be one option. A second option would be literally on a blank sheet of paper, or whether that's a blank note in your smartphone, whatever that is for you, is to literally write down a whole load of stuff you'd just like to do. So for example, if you went on a writing course, the odds are your business writing would get better and your problem solving would get better. If you went on an improvising course, the odds are your brain will think differently. So it's about being wide-ranging. You don't necessarily need to know how you are going to use a skill in order for you to have to go and learn that skill. If you have a passion for something, the odds are you're going to excel in that over something that you won't have a passion. So there's a really good logic for following your passion first, rather than something that happens to churn out a good salary in exchange for 40 hours a week. Thirdly, ask people. One of the best things that I ever heard as a technique, and I put into practice myself, was ask people what they can count on you for. And ask people what they can't count on you for. Be prepared for some varied answers. And also be prepared to respond with respect in answering those questions back of the person that you're asking, just to be reciprocal. When you ask people, what can you count on me for? You can get some amazing answers. Things that you didn't know, subtle things that perhaps you're a great networker, perhaps you're a great lateral thinker, perhaps you're a really great temperature check, for want of a better word, in meetings. Perhaps you're the sage-like person that rounds up the whole meeting or the whole forum at the end, where you haven't had been fighting with everyone else for a bit of airtime in the middle. And that is actually a really wise function that you, the role that you play, and that you may not have realised that. Perhaps there is something that you might have an introverted nature that really brings a really necessary, quiet, kind of risk-averse, in a way, character to a team. It's about finding out what makes you tick that other people notice. And then finding out what, when people can't count on you for things, that gives you two options. One is to sit back and go, okay, fine, that's me, that's okay. And the other part is to go, wow, all right, so that's an area I could develop then. So it might be about self-awareness. It might be about listening skills. It might be, for example, most of us completely misjudge how assertive we are or aren't, normally in completely the wrong direction on the spectrum, or opposite direction in on the spectrum. And so just to find out whether we might think we're really assertive, but other people think we're not very assertive, that's really valuable in itself. So we might want to go and do something with that. But you have a choice. We tend to think about a lot about the things that we're not good at and think we should improve those. I know someone that's really high up in one of the most significant media companies in this country, and she doesn't like presenting. What she does is she delegates to her whole team the whole time, and she's managed, she doesn't know how she's done it quite, and she's managed to delegate all of the presenting at conferences and everything to her team. She's ended up being a great leader because she got so sweaty and felt so sick, unless she's absolutely required to, she doesn't. But what she's done is she works on what she's got, and she works on what she's good at and that she loves, and she's a great leader, aside from the actual presenting fears. So you can choose. You can choose to go and do something with what you might perceive as a weakness, or you can choose to ignore that and work on the things that are your strengths. You will all generally, not always, but generally you will do better, like you probably may have done at school or in education or in the workplace before. You will generally do better at the things that happen to come more naturally. So why beat yourself up over the things that don't?
I think that's a great point to leave it. You've given us a lot of insight into areas of personal development, relationships, and that we can all go away and hopefully work on improving lots of different aspects of our careers and our personal lives as well. Thank you so much for joining us, Claire.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates.
It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.